Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and gastronaut. It's National School Meals Week in the UK, and to mark that, we're doing a series of episodes looking at the challenges around providing nutritious food for our children in the school canteen. In the last episode, we heard from the school caterer's trade body, LACER, about the challenges they're facing from rising costs and supply chain issues. There's no denying the difficulties being faced by school meal providers, but are there some solutions out there? In this episode, I meet Stephanie Slater, founder and chief executive of the charity School Food Matters. Can you give me the story of School Food Matters? Why did you set it up and what impact has it had?
Well, it's very simple, Stefan. Basically, I was a parent sending her two small children to the local primary school in London, and the food was atrocious. So when I say it was bad, when we arrived, this is an outstanding Ofsted-rated primary school, the first thing the office manager said was, sorry about the smell, that's lunch. And there was a real sort of fait accompli, you know, nothing we can do about this, this is just what school food's like. And that was not my experience of food growing up or for my children. So I sort of naively thought I could fix this. I knew nothing about public sector procurement. I came from 20 years in film production, but I just assumed that because I could sort out film production, I'll be able to knock this on the head in about 6 weeks. 4 years later, we transformed school food, not just in my children's primary school, but across the contract, which was 38 primary schools in the London borough. And we moved from a ready meal that was produced in a factory in Wales to cook fresh across all of the 38 primary schools. Take-up had been 26%, and most of it was going in the bin. And within a term, it had over doubled. So we were well over 50%. And that was just as families were getting more confident about the food that was being offered to their children. But possibly the most important part of this story, Stefan, because, you know, we're all thinking about the economy and money at the moment, the meal price came down. So we were serving high quality food for a lower price. And that is just basic economies of scale. More children were eating it, therefore they could afford to invest in the service.
And you've just had your 15th birthday. Well, not you, obviously you're a full-blown adult, but the School Food Matters has just had the 15th birthday. And sort of broadly, just paint a broader picture, what are the other impacts that you've achieved?
Well, it's interesting because, as I said, I had no idea I was setting up a charity or running a campaign, but it just had a head of steam and there was a need. There was a need to do something about school food, but also about food education. One of the things that stuck in my brain from that first year, 2007, was I spent the first year listening and learning about the sector, what was going on. And I heard a head teacher in a primary school in London say that children couldn't recognise an onion. We're not talking about an aubergine or an artichoke, the basic staples that go into most meals. Children couldn't recognise it because they'd had no connection with raw ingredients. So I sort of got a bit of a head of steam in relation to cooking skills and food growing and all the things I thought children should enjoy to reconnect them with nature and reconnect them with where food comes from. So that's the other part of our work. 15 years on, started off with me being that pushy parent, and now we are 23, including our own food teacher and three school gardeners and a team of really passionate people who are either trained in nutrition or project management who go into schools every single day and talk to children and talk to teachers about what they need to support children's health.
Now, changing school meals is a huge affair. How would you assess the state of school meals across the UK at the moment? Are we in a good place or a bad place?
I would say, Stefan, it's patchy. So there are areas that do fantastic work, and there are some that need a little bit of help to do better. Now, I was part, because of the work I'd done in my kids' borough, I was invited to be part of the school food plan expert panel, which you may recall Henry Dimbleby and John Vincent ran with Michael Gove and DfE back in 2013. And that identified three really important components to an excellent school food service. One, a head teacher who leads the change. So we're talking about leadership here. The other is taking a whole school approach to school food. So by that, I mean everybody gets involved. So you don't get that anomaly of really great school food, but a PE teacher walking down the corridor with a Mars bar and a can of Coke. So we want everything that goes on in that school to reflect our desire to support children's health. And the other thing is, it sort of gets lost sometimes, is seeing the service through the eyes of a child. So we're talking about the customers. What do they want? And a sort of example of where that can go wrong is I can remember very early on going to a school when they said their infants weren't eating the meal. The reception kids were scared of the dining room. And I walked through and I realised that the counter was too high. They couldn't see the food. So it's all that stuff that restaurants and supermarkets do so well. You need a little bit of that in school sometimes.
And how do you feel that, you know, I mean, that I was surprised actually at how long ago the school food plan was. I mean, 2013, so 9 years ago. How do you, from that happening to now, do you feel frustrated at lack of progress, or are you excited about progress, or what's your own state of mind? Are you still angry and drum beating like you were when you first went to your kid's school?
Well, things change, don't they? In the 15 years, so when I set up the charity, it was all about quality and making school food delicious and acceptable by our customers. And it sort of makes me pause a lot to think that in 15 years, we've changed from trying to improve the quality to now improving the access. So making sure that vulnerable children are getting a free school meal, addressing issues around health inequality. We've got that double-edged sword that is hunger amongst school children and unhealthy weight. And those two things often go together. We know that unhealthy weight follows low income. So our focus has really changed to try and support schools, to support the families that are struggling to feed their children well. So am I frustrated? I am delighted that more schools have school gardens. I am delighted that cooking is mandatory on the school curriculum. I am delighted that infants get a free school meal. All those things came out of the school food plan. But I'm really sad that a lot of low-income families can't access a free school meal. So that is our main focus at the moment, trying to extend eligibility so that children can benefit from good nutrition, because then they can learn. They can't learn when they're hungry.
Yeah. So why are families not eligible? Is there a hinterland where families are struggling but the means testing just puts them out of the Venn diagram?
Spot on. I mean, you may recall from a previous Prime Minister, a few back now, she came up with the term JAMS, just about managing. So we're talking about working parents who just fall outside the very restrictive eligibility criteria. And not to get too technical about this, but families on universal credit, so low-income families who attract universal credit, cannot earn more than £7,400 per household per year, otherwise they lose their free school meal. So you have families who are moving in and out of shift work or extra hours, flexible gig economy people, and they just keep missing out. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't need the support. It just means that they don't fit this funny little sort of square peg in a round hole that is set up by means testing children. And then, you know, the aspiration has to be for all children to receive a free school meal. We don't charge them for textbooks. We don't charge them for a chair to sit on. Why are we means testing food, which is an essential part of the school day? Now, we're smart enough to know that this is not the time to ask for that level of investment. But what we do need to do is respond to the need of those families who are just missing out, especially as gas prices going through the roof and cost of living crisis. We need to support those families now. And that's what we're campaigning for right now.
And what is your suggested solution? Is it a change in the parameters?
As I say, long term, free makes perfect sense to me. But in the short term, Henry Dimbleby in the National Food Strategy recommended that every family receiving universal credit should get a free school meal and just forget about the threshold. So that's what we're really pushing, because we don't want a piece of administration. We don't want a piece of paper to get in the way of good nutrition. And the other thing that needs to happen at the same time, so that all these families don't miss out, is what we call auto-enrollment, which means that DWP, who have all the data about who's eligible, talk to DfE. And then this beautiful thing happens and families are automatically enrolled. They don't have to try and struggle with a form or put their hand up and say, I'm poor, my children need a free school meal. Think about stigma. We just want to remove that and make school lunch a really pleasurable experience that children can enjoy together.
So what's the impact of getting a decent meal at school? We know, obviously it's about the school day, and it's about being able to afford a meal. But what are the longer term impacts of getting food right in schools?
Well, I guess that the sort of gold standard impact data would be to show it has an impact on healthy weight, children's choices around food. And we know that the University of Essex is looking at that now. But for me, one of the really important things, I guess it's because, you know, I'm a parent that set up a campaign, and I think about the shared experience and the love of food. So if we can normalise sitting at a table with your peers, all the social graces around sitting and sharing food, if we can normalise that for families and children at a really young age, it has an impact on their social interactions into adulthood. And I think that is a really important lesson. We know that a lot of the families that we work with don't have a dining table. You know, they don't have beautiful kitchens. They don't have that lovely experience of sharing food together. So if we can give young people an experience of that in school, that, you know, that has to have a benefit. The wider benefits, of course, are learning. And we know from any teacher you will speak to that if children are eating Mars bars and packets of crisps at lunchtime, they're going to be bouncing off the walls in the afternoon, or indeed they'll be falling asleep. In the same way that breakfast has a positive impact on learning in the morning, lunch has a positive impact on learning in the afternoon. And we also know that some of the families we're working with, it's the only hot meal these children will have in 24 hours. So it's very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, caterers, or a third of caterers, are saying that school meal standards are going to suffer as prices rise and they have to make savings. And a third of them are saying that they'll be using more processed food in school meals. What's your view on this? And as you said, when with your school, the price of meals came down. You know, the cheapest components in food generally are the healthy ones. It's, you know, beans, potatoes, carrots and things like that. I mean, they're pretty cheap. So is this a problem that caterers are going to be using more processed food? And what might be the solution?
So I'm trying to flip this argument completely. I absolutely acknowledge that investment needs to go into school food, because there hasn't been a shift in the meal price. It's just been little adjustments. So there are weird anomalies around school food funding that need sorting out. But I'm here to say that I firmly believe in our catering teams. I firmly believe that they're committed to children's health. And I firmly believe that they have the skills to make adjustments to menus, adding more pulses, using less meat, all the stuff that we know, A, is good for the environment, but also is good for the purse. And I haven't seen a caterer that isn't canny enough to work their way through this. That is not to say that there isn't a problem and investment is needed. But I think there's real jeopardy in selling a story about processed foods, low standards and poor quality. Because you also have to remember there are an army of parents that can pay, and they probably will stop paying if they think the food is going to be rubbish. So every time I sit in a meeting, every time we were at the House of Commons last week for the all-party parliamentary group, and these conversations were happening, and I'm saying, stop right there. We need to be saying that school food is great. It needs a bit of help right now because food prices have gone through the roof. We acknowledge that. but we need to say that we are committed to serving excellent food at school. Otherwise, people are just going to start walking away from it. And we'll be back to those dreary old days when I had 26% of children taking a school meal because they thought it was rubbish. So there's just a little bit of jeopardy in that. It's getting the campaign ask right, but not putting off people from school food.
Now, tell us a little bit about the school food review. Now, I believe you're coordinating this. What is it and what are its aims?
So way back in lockdown, we all spent a lot of time thinking about school food funding and getting children access to good nutrition. And one of the things that we found, personally, because we were all on the phone, and we were sitting at home, and I was getting calls from schools going, OK, I know we've got these voucher things, but is that infant-free school meals or is that means-tested free school meals? And there was such a confusion around this convoluted way of funding school meals that we thought, well, look, why don't we try and shake it all up and see if we can come up with a better solution? So that's precisely what the School Food Review is. So we are supported by a fabulous charity called Impact on Urban Health. They are trying to unpick health inequalities, and obviously one of those things is what children eat at school. And we have identified, let's see if I can remember all five of them, five pillars, if you like, of things that need to happen to reform school food. Funding is one of them. I've discussed that now. Uptake is a really important one. It's the economies of scale thing. We need bums on seats to make school food financially viable. Procurement is really important. How we buy food. Are we supporting our British farmers? Are we buying stuff that's in season? All of the complexities around procurement. Eligibility, really important. This is what we're pushing on at the moment. And that's what you'll probably hear more about in the coming weeks and months as the party conferences are coming around. National School Meals Week is coming up in November, so you'll hear a lot about eligibility, getting more kids access. And the final one, I have remembered all five, is all about quality. So how are we making sure that what ends up on the plate reflects the investment that goes in? And that comes with what we call accountability. Who's looking? Who's out there looking at school dinners? Nobody at the moment is the answer. So we are working with Department for Education at the moment to have a sort of two-pronged approach to that. One is in some sort of inspection, so the Food Standards Agency is supporting this. And the other thing is the schools to tell their story. What do they want to say to their parents and their communities about how they support children's health? So DfE is asking them to publish a school food report on their website. So these have happened since we've been working hard on this review. I should talk about the other partners. School Food Matters is working with Impact on Urban Health, but we've also got the Food Foundation, who produce amazing data through all their surveys, YouGov polls on what's happening out there. We've got Bite Back, which is Jamie Oliver's child obesity youth-led movement. We have Chefs in Schools, which is Henry Dimbleby's charity that he set up, which gets restaurant chefs in school kitchens. And we're all working together to make sure that we keep school food high on the list of things that government needs to worry about, but also schools need to worry about.
And how have you found that, actually dealing with the government and going to the House of Commons? And I know you're going to be diplomatic about this because you don't want to upset people, but, you know, Gove was pretty good about starting off the school food plan, and but obviously things have changed enormously. Is it a struggle keeping this on the agenda?
Slightly telling that when the portfolios for the new ministers were published last week, school food wasn't on it. It wasn't underneath anybody's name. So I firmly believe that will be rectified quick smart. But obviously we've been waiting for a new Secretary of State. We've been waiting for a junior minister to be given the portfolio of school food. So we are in an extraordinary situation at the moment, Steph. And I don't think this really reflects our interactions with government over the years. I think the Department for Education are quite proud of the response they made to holiday provision. You know, they invested in a pilot and they've committed to another 3 years of investment in holiday food. So, you know, that is a real positive because they can't argue with the stats. They know that children are struggling, particularly over that 6-week summer holiday. So I do believe there are some very hardworking civil servants there that want to make this happen, because many of them are parents. So, and everybody eats. So it's kind of, if you're going to campaign on some things, food's quite a good thing, really, because everybody kind of gets it because everybody eats. So from that perspective, I think civil servants and ministers are genuinely engaged. When they start getting into the complexity of the policy and the funding, that's when things start to get slightly more tricky, because it's a great reorganisation that needs to happen, reform needs to happen, and it's going to take a long time. And of course, we're asking for more money for more children to have school dinners. So tricky conversations, particularly with the Treasury.
Yeah, absolutely. So just one final question, really. Are there any simple solutions here? Of course, this is a massively complex issue, and there are problem, lots of different mountains to climb along the way. What are the simpler solutions? What's the low-hanging fruit that would have the most effect with the least amount of effort and money?
Without effort and money, I can't think of anything, because everything requires... Even if it doesn't require money, it definitely requires effort. So I guess going back to just make them free, just feed the kids. You know, it just seems such an anomaly that we means test this essential part of the school day. And we, you know, we're being pragmatic, we're thinking do this in steps, but we are lagging behind Scotland and Wales here. And Northern Ireland have got a higher threshold than we have. So England is lagging behind. So that's sort of the immediate first step, to get more children having a school lunch. I think at a school level, or even at a parent level, parents can bring about change. Here you go, there's one here, by asking questions. And a lot of parents, I think they're not allowed to do that. But I think they should be doing it. And I think if you have questions about your child's lunch, rather than sending a packed lunch, which is never going to get... packing that, unless you're going to spend hours on it, it's going to be really difficult to get the same nutrition as a balanced school meal. You know, if you're concerned, ask your school if you can come and have a school lunch. I mean, it's really odd that people don't think they can do that.
Yeah.
And I think if they won't let you come in, there are questions to be asked. Obviously, you've got to pay for your lunch. You know, don't expect a free lunch. But I think going and having a look and having a taste is really important. And standing in the queue, you know, what's the queuing like? How does the dining room work? So we've written on our School Food Matters website some top tips that parents can do. So I think, you know, we need to attack it on all levels.
And is the kernel of this, is the heart, at the heart of this, and getting people to do that, is it about getting the heads on board? Is that what's going to shift attitudes and cause change?
Without a doubt. Absolutely. And we spend a lot of time talking to parents at School Food Matters, and we always say it's much more successful if you don't take a combative approach, but you can say, hey, our school's outstanding, let's make our food outstanding too. If you come in with that really positive, how can we help you do this, I think head teachers are a lot more receptive than if you go in with a bit of forbatoo, because they've got a lot to deal with. So it's, what can you do? You know, what can you do? Maybe you can start supporting the school garden. Maybe you can start volunteering to help set up cooking classes. So it's being helpful and helping schools to do as well as they can with school food and food education.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, which is part of a series looking at school meal provision in the UK. Look out for the next episode, where we hear from a researcher who's studied the important role school meals can play in a child's learning. Thank you so much for listening.